بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. When man was created, and Shaitan realized that he's been rejected because of man, so he vowed to mislead, and in every possible manner, whichever way he is able to mislead, he will mislead. He asked Allah Ta'ala for several things, several instruments or weapons whereby he could mislead. So Allah Ta'ala gave him various things. Something was given and he didn't feel too excited about it. And when he was given music and woman, so he says, no, this is the right thing. He's hardly a man who cannot get affected with music and woman, no matter how pious and how good he may be. But just press the button of music or woman, man gets affected. Shaitan himself says that if even Hazrat Hasan Basri rahmatullah alayhi, and Rabia Basriya rahmatullah alayha, if they are in seclusion, then I will whisper evil thoughts one against the other. So these two weapons are so effective. Shaitan has asked more things, that I must be able to influence mankind. One other third thing that he was given, that innahu qabilu yarawnahum min haythu ma tarawnahum, that he can see you, you can't see him. So Shaitan got an additional advantage that you can't see him, but he can see you. So Adam alayhi salam also asked for some things, that Shaitan has got so many things to influence and I don't have anything. So he's going to eat me up. He'll finish me, he'll wipe me out. Therefore it is reported that, imagine a place is infested with flies, right? Flies. When we're studying in India, so you'll find a mitai, you know, mitai. It's nice, well decorated, and like a cake, you know, big size. But we will think, because of the abundance of flies, we will think it's raisins on top. So many flies. So imagine a place like that, full flies, and you've got an open jar of honey. What's going to happen? Flies are going to get in, unless you put a lid there, shake it, keep moving it. So if it were not for the malaika protecting Bani Adam, Shaitan would have wiped you out. So it is by the permission of Allah Ta'ala that the malaika support you, they protect you, they guard you against Shaitan and Shaitan's influences. So Allah Ta'ala blessed mankind with the support of malaika. لَهُ مُعَقِّبَاتٌ مِّن بَيْنِ يَدَيْهِ مِّن خَلْفِ يَحْفَظُونَهُ مِّن أَمْرِ اللَّهِ. Malaika come from in front, from behind. There's some hadith that says that just for the eye, it's approximately 7 malaika just to guard your eye. So you are being guarded, you have been protected from all sides through the help and the agency of the malaika. Then Adam alayhi salam asked for something more, that Shaitan has got so many things. He's got the influence, he's got the right to influence me, that he sees me in a manner that I can't see him. And he's got so much. And if Adam alayhi salam has got a child, that he gets a child straight away, he's got so many things, then what do I have? So Allah Pak blessed Adam alayhi salam with one, this is one thing that he's blessed with, malaika and their support. The second thing mankind was blessed with, that if you are going to do one good deed, it will be multiplied tenfold. مَنْ جَاءَ بِالْحَسَنَةِ فَلَهُ أَشْرُ أَمْثَالِهَا. So now Shaitan began to cry, now, what about, what's happening here? So, well, you got some things, So he must get something as well. So Adam alayhi salam asked for something even more. This person has got so much over me. You can influence, you can see, I can't see him. So something even more. So then Allah Ta'ala blessed Adam alayhi salam, no matter what the nature of the sin. But before death, if you sincerely you make tawbah, before death, person sincerely comes to Allah Ta'ala, honestly, sincerely, clearly, he asks for forgiveness, then all his sins will be demolished, everything will be wiped out. No matter what the nature of the sin, how serious, what was the offense, what was the crime that he had committed. But he's got that tawfiq to come to Allah Ta'ala and sincerely beg for forgiveness. Allah Ta'ala will wipe him out, complete, absolutely, totally wiped out. And you find many cases like this, that a person sinned his life, and then just a day or 2 days or a week before he passed away, and then he just made tawbah. Tabligh Jamaat was somewhere in Morocco somewhere, and they went for gusht, one old Arab. His state was not right, drink and drunkard and all that. So Jamaat people also got a approach, Anta Abuna wa Sayyiduna, they throw you up, you're our father and your uncle, you know, you must come to the masjid. So they got a style to make the person feel nice, not to push him down. You can see now he's broken down, so you break him even further, then he loses hope. So yeah, drunkard, old man like you, who brings you on? So that's not the approach, there's another approach. The idea is to, if it was your own father, you wouldn't have done that. You will want him, no matter what it is, but you will want him to come to Jannah. So now, how to get him to Jannah? To win the person and bring him to Jannah. So that's the idea. So we can't be having a negative approach, a positive approach. It doesn't mean that you must say the truth and say it with bitterness. When you can say it sweetly, then you don't say it. Yes, you can't say it, then you'll have to. If, for example, there's a right that is outstanding, right? It's outstanding right. Owed to Mr. So-and-so, Mr. Zaid, for example, right? So, if he's going to be bitter to Mr. Amr, you'll have to still say, this money, this right is Zaid's, I can't mince my words. They never say it. But it doesn't mean that you must make your words bitter, unpleasant, unsavory, aggressive, and suppress the person, shout him and push him down. That's not the idea. It's not an Islamic way. See, because we didn't get the right Islamic training, so whatever we think, whatever we imagine, we think that is the Islam. Shout the person, aggressive, use some vulgar languages, you know, and just smash him down. That's not Islam. Islam, Nabi Sallam himself, لَمْ يَكُنْ فَاحِشًا وَلَا مُتَفَاحِشًا. Repeatedly this word comes about Nabi Sallam in the Hadith, as well as in the scriptures of the past. Nabi Sallam wasn't immodest. He wasn't an aggressive person. لَمْ يَكُنْ فَاحِشًا وَلَا مُتَفَاحِشًا. Wasn't immodest, wasn't aggressive, wasn't harsh. Tell a person, but modestly, respectfully tell him. So, we're coming to Adam alayhi salam, and Adam alayhi salam needs some additional support. So one is that his deeds will be multiplied 10 times. Right? Malaika are going to support him. Number 3 is, no matter what the nature of the guna, but as long as he's making tawbah before death, Allah will wipe him out complete. We're talking about that Moroccan. So the Jamaat, somehow they caught the person. Caught him, rounded him up. They brought him to the masjid. He made ghusl, put on good clothes, and he came to the masjid. Now, how the tarteeb goes, that after Isha, there is a bayan, perhaps they'll have some snack or something, and then they'll teach them the adab of sleeping, whatever, encourage the brothers to sleep, and then get up for tahajjud. That was the original method, right? Everybody will get up for tahajjud. Someone is crying, someone is reciting, someone is making zikr, everybody is getting up, right? Allah Ta'ala restored this old style. There was the zikr, yesterday we spoke about zikr, and the abundance of zikr, the effect it has. The home must be buzzing with zikr, masjid with the name of Allah Ta'ala, Quran Sharif. rather than getting engaged in politics. In our own deen, and getting into politics, etc., the taste of deen is lost. The love, respect, and confidence I have has broken down. I don't know what to say to which person. So I can't be clear to you. My heart cannot be absolutely clean for you and preserved. So that's the result of this dishonest type of approach that we have. And when we are honest, we are clean, clear, and it's just a matter of meeting you, and I tell you what I feel, and you will tell me thereafter that this is right or not right. So my mind becomes absolutely clear. I'm not hiding anything from you. So this is the effect of zikr. Zikr polishes the heart. See, everything has a polish. The rust collects over metal. So a type of rust gets over your heart. But then the rust, now you need to polish it and clear the rust. So the effective thing is two things, let's say. One is thinking of death, and one is zikr, Quran Sharif. This is the thing that polishes. All that dirt and the filth, that muck is all out. And now the good can permeate, it can get into that heart. So anyway, the Jamaat, according to the tartib, they whatever they need to do. One of the Jamaat members says that tahajjud time perhaps says 3 o'clock or so, but I'm hearing from the corner of the masjid, in the darkness of the night, stillness and the darkness of the night, I'm hearing from one corner, someone is crying, and he's crying bitterly. So I was curious to know, you know, this person here, who's this pious person, came and joined us, and he's crying there bitterly. So I didn't want to disturb and disrupt him. So I went in, crept slowly, without him being disturbed. See, so he's crying bitterly for his sins. My whole life I spent in this. My gunas, my sin, what wrong I've been doing. You're the only recourse, only way I can go and get myself forgiven and clean is at your threshold. Cried. And he cried, and by Fajr he was no more, he's gone. So his life was in guna, but perhaps his heart was good. And it was the blessings of his Jamaat. They got him to the masjid and made him realize what he was doing was not right. But with respect, you know, your father, your uncle, your leader. So obviously the man feels nice. Every person wants that you show him some regard, some consideration. Not that you push him down because of his state. Show him some consideration and bring him close. You show him some respect. Like I say, if it was your own father, then what would have been your approach? Say he was gone off completely. Would you just shout him, throw him, kick him out of the house? Would you do this? So some approach, respectable way that you would like to be called, you will use that approach. So his life is in guna, but he ended up so beautifully. So beautiful. So that means there must have been something very good in his heart, something very precious. It just struck, he struck that chord right. He struck it, the man died, and he died in tawbah, in forgiveness. The hadith says it, al-ta'ibu habibullah. So as though he died as a friend of Allah Ta'ala. So, Shaitan, when he heard all this now, this man is going to do everything. And at the end, he might just say, astaghfirullah. And then everything is wiped out. So, meri puri zindagi ki kamai khatam hui. Whatever I've earned the whole lifetime. Yeah, I've been doing this, selling to the casino, into the clubs, and into cinema halls, into all type of wrong advice. And then one stroke and everything is maf. Hey, meri kamai to khatam hui. He destroyed my whole business. That was my business, Shaitan's business. And then one stroke and everything is wiped out. So then Shaitan thought, now I need to get this person from a different way. So then he innovated innovations and bid'at. Confuse the person, complicate the person, make him feel as though what he's doing is deen. He's not doing it deliberately, but his mind is confused somewhat. He's got some complication. So he feels that this is the right thing. And because of the confusion, he went off. When he went off and he started something, as an innovation, as a bidat, obviously he will, he's not going to make tawbah for it, because he considers it to be part of deen. He'll feel good about doing it, like we go for umrah, and don't we feel good, we've been blessed, alhamdulillah, Allah brought us to his house. So we don't make tawbah, Allah, you know, I came for umrah, I'll never do this again. So, the same now, that bidat he's considering counting it as deen, and he's counting it as deen, so he's not going to make tawbah to leave that thing. Right? So shaitan told Mawla, I'll get mankind with this approach. I'll get him with this approach, I'll get him to innovations, new practices, that he thinks it's deen, whereas it is not deen. Quran is true deen. Many people tried to correct, right? They tried. Alhamdulillah, Allah gave them a lot of luck. In India, here also, they have this, this is a funeral, then they have a thing like Tija and Chaliswa and all that, right? Third day after the person has died, or some places the 11th day after the person, Agyarvi Sharif. Right? And sometimes they have the Chaliswa for the 40th day after the person passed away. Right? So they have some type of a get-together. Now, like I said, this it was introduced not because, not deliberately. They didn't invent it deliberately. Some confusion. Somewhere down the line, there's a confusion. And because there's a confusion, they went on to this thing here. Like you see, they have this urus, right? So, the urus also is not done. It wasn't calculated. Oh, we're going to do this bidat. No, it wasn't like that. What has happened? If you look into the Indian history, what happened? What they may have been a buzuruk or a sheikh, right? And people were benefiting from him tremendously. So in the past, it wasn't like how it is now. Like communications are so easy. So many ulama, so many madrasas, so many khanqah. It wasn't like that. So a sheikh will work on people and he'll see this person is capable, so he'll post him. Like, you must go and look after, for example, the whole of KwaZulu Natal, you must look after that. So he is in charge of the whole place, big place. Right. So then people will flock to him, they'll get some inspiration, they'll get some direction, they'll move on. And then this becomes his business. The whole day and night he is working how to teach them, how to guide them, how to bring them onto the sunnah. So he's working on them night and day. This is his whole figure. So the sheikh will appoint his vicegerent, and the vicegerent will also so perfect. It is a complete embodiment of hidayat, absolute hidayat. So when he builds him up like that, he makes him that, and he posts him, you go look after this place here. But now in the process, whilst the sheikh has appointed numerous people, right, in the process, someone is in the making, someone is made, someone is at the entry level. So entry level, someone is made, someone is still in the process of being made, right? Now the sheikh died. Can you imagine now, see the whole scenario, that it's still in the making, and one person is still just starting off, one is somewhere in the process, and someone is already made. So the one that is already made, not a problem, because he knows the whole game, he knows the whole itinerary, the whole plan, he knows. He's perfected, and therefore the sheikh had already posted him to that position. But now there's two classes: one is the entry level, and one that is in the process. Now that was a problem area. He's working on them, and he's passed away. So now, what to be done? So the deputies of the sheikh, they got together and said, we need to work with our sheikh's people. It's like our own family. If it's our own family, then we need to work with them. Because it mustn't be now that the little they got, they just do that and then leave the rest. Because in correcting a person, it takes time. You're not going to correct the person overnight. Make him namazi, tahajjud, roza, ramzan, hajj, everything. In one stroke, you're not going to do it. We'll do it gradually, in stages you're going to correct the person. Because it's a whole lifestyle. Him, his wife, parda, namaz, roza, hygiene, Islamic taharat, all these things, all, it's a detailed plan. Not just one small little thing. It's a detailed plan. What about beard? What about underarms? What about mustache? What about miswak? All this. So many things, right? So you're not going to get all these things in one stroke, right? Well, that's why Allah Pak bless Muhammad Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullahi over and over, a million times, over and over. So the, many people, they get a compatibility with deen by joining the Jamaat. 40 days now, that whole behavior, provided the Amir Sahib is right, you see. I have to say this thing repeatedly, because the type of fikr that is supposed to be, right, that fikr is now getting a little bit weakened. So now, the right Amir is, he's watchful. The whole Jamaat, I need to get them in 40 days or 4 months, I need to work on them. How to work on them, what to do, how to correct them, how to rectify them. And he has to do it without shouting. He can't shout them. He can't make them feel small. He can't disgrace them and embarrass them. So he has to respect them and he has to work on them. So sometimes he's got 40 days, sometimes he's got 4 months, but he has to create a whole Islamic figure on this person here. So many a times you find that the person that is going for that 4 months, he comes, say, more or less he comes right. But then there must be a follow-up after that. After the 4 months, he'll go for 40 days, 3 days. He carries on the process, then he comes right, alhamdulillah. Then you get a Puranas, and you get Karkun, old workers, right? You get people coming up, they're coming right, right? But that is provided now, they follow the whole plan. See, the whatever plan is planned out for them, they must follow it up. They can't do half and then leave out. The form comes when you do a little bit and you leave it out. So you got a little bit, and then you thought that you got sufficient, that's enough for you. So you have to continue with it. Continue, and then if it's a continuous process, at the end you see a lot of good. A lot of good you find. Like you had one, there was one Colonel Amiruddin, some of us may have seen him, right? Right. So he was, his mother perhaps was a Scottish, and he was a Sayyid, right? So he joined the Jamaat. He's coming from the fast lane, absolute fast lane, and he's coming. And he kept himself committed, right till the end. His words used to be like, smash into smitherings. In other words, animal kingdom of the West. It's two words, I can show them. Smashed into smitherings, animal kingdom of the West. So anyway, he was a colonel, and he was on the extreme fast lane, right? And then he came. And he came with such fervor and such spirit that 5,000 Americans accepted Islam at his hand. 5,000 at his hand. But that is because he maintained that. Maintained a taluk, that attachment, the akabir, right till the very end. He never let go. So much of work in this country, other countries, he will still remember him, right? So, you don't blame the world, you blame the individual. Like, if a student is misbehaving outside the madrasa, you don't behave the madrasa, you blame the student, but he's not keeping up. If he kept up attached to the ustaz, to the elders, there would have been some color in him. But he went halfway and he left it. Now, how can the madrasa assume responsibility for that? They did whatever they could do, and he needed to keep himself attached. But he didn't keep himself attached. As a result, now he flopped. The real taste comes when it goes through the entire process. Imagine if it's meat, right? You got meat. Right? Very expensive product, right? Now, you just prepared it quarter way and you left it. Kebab, just quarter way, one-tenth way. Is anybody going to enjoy it? Are they going to eat it? It has to go through the whole process for the thing to be enjoyed. So same with us. You have to go through the whole process. It takes time. The thing that takes longest to make, the thing that takes longest to make is mankind. That's the man making the man. In other words, making him spiritually right. So it's not a 1 day, 2 days issue. Be at it. At it all the time. Be at it. And you can't leave it halfway. And look at a hen, and it's got its eggs, right? So the thing has to sit over the eggs at least 3 weeks. But you must, you know, just go and see the thing, see how it does. Right? And if you don't have a chicken and hen, and go to Moni Zakaria's place, you'll find out. That thing got its full tawajju on the eggs. Full tawajju. You know how the buzzards make tawajju? That thing, that hen's tawajju is just on the egg. If it goes out, it's a little bit, any scrap it will just eat, but the whole tawajju is on his eggs. Come back to apply the heat, and then to with its body, it will let those eggs revolve, go around. So the heat is supplied to that entire thing equally. So from within is working also. Whole tawajju, whole figure is there. Don't worry about its food, don't worry about anything. My chicks are eating, worried about. Imagine if that hen was worried about its chicks, right? After the first week or so, enough now, enough is enough now. I can't kill myself for this thing here. I need to go for a walk, swim a beach, take a walk over the beach, and you know, take a swim and all that, meet some friends. What's going to happen to the eggs? All good rocking. They were 1 week, they were made in the process, but then they were neglected, khalas. So exactly the same happens to us. We just started the Jamaat work, or Khanqa work, or Madrasa, whatever. Three things we have got, right? And we went a little bit, and we left it. Now we think, I went to Jamaat, hey, what happened to me? But did you follow the whole routine, the whole plan that they've got? Did you follow it? Did you keep yourself committed to it? Did you keep in touch? That hen, the chicken had to keep itself in touch. Even after it was hatched. Even after it was hatched, and say, for example, it said, no, now my mother did enough, now I need to cut away, break away. One eagle will come, some will come, and in one morsel it will take it away. Some cat will come, some eagle will come, some dog will come, one morsel is gone, finished. So, similarly, when the man just came in, he got a little bit of taste, and he's left. So you got this eagles of guna. Sometimes it's woman, sometimes it's sin, sometimes it's a club, sometimes it's a circle of friends. They're all waiting to eat you up. Sometimes it's friend, sometimes it's association, sometimes it's company, sometimes it's woman, sometimes it's music. So all these things are like those predators that are waiting to attack. So now he has to be in line all the time. He has to be keeping in touch, keeping in contact. So if he keeps in contact, then he's getting that heat. That heat is passing on. Or he may make a mistake here and there, but the fact that he's keeping in contact, he's keeping in touch, so he'll get that heat, he'll continue. And the biggest problem is that you just stayed a few days and you felt complacent, like, not enough. Mera kaam to ban gaya, ab mujhe kisi ki zaroorat nahi hai. My work is done, I've done it, it's over. Now imagine, we have cases here, students coming out first sight. And then after, you meet them after 3-4 years, you ask the student who came out first, spent so many years, right? Are you in touch with your kitabs? When last you look at your kitabs? You get cases where last I checked my kitabs when I was in the madrasa. For 3 years now, he didn't check the kitab. Now imagine a professional person, right? Doctor or accountant or whatever, right? And he's not in touch with his profession for 3 years, 4 years, not in touch at all. He just came out, right? Just came out, and that he's not in touch with his profession for 3 years. What will happen? He must get rushed. He must forget these things. So if he keeps in touch with the profession, with the people of that profession, keep in that circle, so he becomes better, brighter, more efficient, more effective. He rubs on to him. But he felt, I went, I got my honors, I got my degree, I came out of this thing and I finished. You lost out. So this keeping in touch, it's so important, keeping in touch. Yesterday when I read that article, some of these articles, nice, I can just take them out. Sometimes you can just post it, like how you got a website, just post it. The thing that article read yesterday or the day before. I don't know which session was, in the morning or in the evening. But the sign of progress is, person is looking into the way of his elders. He's looking and is attached to the ways of his elders. So when he's looking into the ways of his elders, then that's a way of security and preservation. The elders, whoever the elders were now, whoever Allah Ta'ala chose to make your elders, then you're holding on to them, their ways, their style, you know, right through. You don't leave that. So we are talking about this bid'ah, right? This branch off a little bit. And how this thing starts off. Right? So I showed you the plan just now. That Buzuruk now, he's appointed here. And there are some that are in the process, some just started, and some made already. Meanwhile, the Buzuruk passed away. The Sheikh passed away. Now, his people are all worried now what to do. Man passed away, so what do we do? So, then some of them, what they started off was that we have a get-together. And the most convenient time to have a get-together is the day of that Buzruk's death, that death anniversary. Because everybody is emotional at that time. You know, this day, this happened, you know. If, for example, someone's father passed away, and he was killed or something, right, at a certain spot. So when you come to the spot, how do you feel? All your remnants, all the past memories, memories and what happened to him and the suffering and the difficulty. So you get emotionally taken away, right? So when you hear the death of your beloved, then you are emotionally affected. So that card, that was the effective card to play, that emotional card, right, under the circumstance. So they got all his mutalliqin, all people that were under him, they got them surrounded on that date, right? Now they got them and then they'll have a small, like an istima or something, but the istima will be perhaps for 3 weeks or so. So in that, people are being trained, corrected, rectified. He's got state problems to correct him. He's got a business-related problem to correct him. He's got a marital problem to correct him. He's got a social problem to correct him. So this whole varieties of problem, and the problem have to be sorted out, so they need quite a bit of time to correct all these things. You can't just do it in 1 hour, 2 hours time. Like people then come careful, take out everything, shoot everything one time. Can't do it. There's one root canal, the dentist will give you about 4 weeks appointment. Come now, again next week, again 3rd week, 4th week. After 4 weeks, he'll sort you out. You can't, and you say, no, doctor, now do it. This one tooth, and how long it takes him. He has to work meticulously, get it perfect, get everything right. Because it's a very sensitive area. Tooth is a very, very sensitive area. And he has to see now, I don't want any comebacks, but I need to work meticulously, get this thing right, sort it out for once and for good. But how long it takes? It takes time. Obviously. But then, surprisingly, when I think of all of my problems, ironed out, class, everything's finished. We'll see you next time, okay, next year. Can't do that. Even with a motor car, you need to have a service plan, a major, overall, and small services also. Timelessly, maybe every month or 2 months, and once in the year or twice in the year, a major service. Then that car goes well. But now, you want to service the car once in 5 years. Say it's a write-off now. It's cheaper now for you to buy a new car. Won't that dealer say it's better for you to buy a new car? Then servicing is old one. But you caused the problem. You didn't service it regularly, timelessly. You brought this problem onto the motor car, but the thing is a write-off. So, same with our deen. Keep on, have to keep working. And you don't have to feel despondent at any time. I left it out for 1 year, 2 years. I just left it out. But you left it out and leave the past. Don't cry over the past. Now, wake up. Say, no, whatever I've neglected, but now for the future, we need to do something. Don't you have problems? Young persons, there was a news some days back, young person, 30 some odd years, had heart attack and he passed away. Nice, but everything normal, absolutely normal. 30 years, got a heart attack, died. This morning was a news, so-and-so's daughter, she driving or something. There's an accident and the car tire went over the stomach. The liver is split into two. Now, things that happen so, it happens so suddenly, you know, so unexpectedly. You don't expect it to happen, it just happened. Only one daughter he's got, and somehow, whatever happened, how the accident took place, Allah knows. But how suddenly it happens. But then I consider this type of sudden death as a blessing for this zamana, for this age. Sudden death. So that it keeps everybody in the state of preparedness. By this happened now, it can happen to me. Otherwise, you know, the distraction, like I said yesterday, distractions are so much that anybody can get drowned. It's so, the distractions are so great and so aggressive, pious or impious, can just throw you off your feet. So you need something massive to correct you also. So the sudden death for us in this age, we don't ask for it, but I think it's a major, it's a great mercy of Allah Ta'ala. Provided someone is thinking correctly, but he puts the wool over his eyes, then there's no ilaj for that. You can see how it's happened. It's happened to him, it happened to this person, it happened to that person. It happened to me. Sometimes it's sudden death, right? Sometimes it is that you were not careful about your daughter, right? And now she came of age and she just eloped. What are you going to do? Or she didn't elope, she got involved with a non-Muslim. Now, hey, where I went wrong? But you see, we left all these things here. You need to keep in touch. I remember my marhum father, rahmatullah alayhi, Allah Ta'ala filled his qabr with nur. So, once you got married, he said, now you can't be carefree, irresponsible. Now you have to be very, very responsible. Once you had a child, once you're married, you are responsible now. So every move of yours must be calculated, must be thought. Because the first, your wife came under you, right? And if you were a carefree person, the wife will also be carefree. She's dressing up anyhow, meeting with any type of people, flirting around. Because you're free, so she's free. وَدُّوا لَوْ تُدْهِنُوا فَيُدْهِنُونَ. You're going to be relaxed, they'll be relaxed. Now then when you got a child, then you have to be even more concerned, more responsible. Before it was just the wife. Before that was your individual self. What if I go off, I'm just going off myself. But now the wife came into the equation, now I have to be double responsible, double vigilant, more concerned. Otherwise now she's the life partner, and I'm not showing any concern. Right? See, I'm not going to show concern that she's going to do the same. This time we'll get children. And then, normally what happens, the child looks at the mother. Because you may see your child, maybe 2 hours in the day, right? But 24 hours of the day, the wife is taking. So if you put the right type of fikr into the wife, she's going to pass it to your child. But you didn't worry about putting the right fikr onto your child. You just worried about yourself, not the wife, not the child. So you may be getting it right. What about your wife? What about your child? So you see the responsibility, it just grows. So you can't be relaxed then. There may be things, my father is explaining, sometimes a thing may be permissible. But because of your wife and children, you have to leave it out. Like for example, now smoking, right? You will not say it's haram, but it's not the right thing to do. Not a better thing to do. Right? But now if you carry on like a chimney, right? Then your child will be nothing less than a stove, at least. It won't be a microwave, right? Right? It'll be somewhere near there. But you carry on like that, you're not worried about it. What's going to happen? Now when you worry after 10 years, hey, why is my child gone black? Like a stove, why is he gone black? But you caused the thing. When you got married, you got a child, now you're a responsible person. I remember some years back, when a mullah came to complain to me, said, I'm embarrassed of my son, you know. I asked, what happened? So my son is about 5 or 6 years of age. So I had some other Mawlana friends, I invited them over for a meal. So my son came in front of the mehman. He said, Abba, Abba, chazari. So I was very embarrassed. How my child can use such a word? So I told the Mawlana, see it is not your child's fault. It's a young, impressionable mind, right? Mistakenly, perhaps, you use that word one or two times in the presence of other people. The child said, my father, Abba, can't be wrong. Abba is right, always. That's how the child thinks. Abba can't be wrong, Appa can't be wrong, Mulana can't be wrong. That's how the child thinks. So the Mulana, the Appa, or the Abba has to be so careful in the presence of the children. In the choice of your words, how you work, how you pull up your face, everything counts. The child is watching, he's observing. He may not tell you, but he's watching what's going on in the house, everything. Then you lump it over to the son, or the child is disobedient, etc. And you don't assume any responsibility, not fair. You also must assume some responsibility. The child went off like this. It was my negligence as well. So, you see, now, the sheikh has died now, and now they're thinking how to wind it up, to wind the estate. Sheikh got an estate, he's got an estate, his estate is deen. So now, how to wind it up, how to correct it? So they say the better thing is just play the emotional card. Emotional card is, you know, the day of his death anniversary. So now, with the year of the death anniversary, everybody will come. And there, in that 3 or 4 weeks, they've got to get together. They're working on everybody. They're working on everybody. So this carried on for some time. And after that, what happened was, see, people, they lose the essence, right? They take bits and pieces and they leave the essential thing out. What was meant, they leave that out, and whatever fancy things, exciting things, they take that in. They take that, the actual thing, what you're supposed to be doing, that is left out. See, like in a nikah, right? In a nikah, what was the main thing in the nikah? The main thing in the nikah was two things. One was to save the spouses from haram and to put them together nicely. They must be nicely, happy, respectful. They must continue with their lives. That's the main thing, right? Muhabbat, understanding, and that they must be safe from haram. That's the main thing. Now, in our marriages nowadays, we made the show the more important. The deco, the hall, the show, the invite, the food that we're serving, right? We made that the more important thing. And the fikr that this couple now, our children must go right, must be responsible, they must bring respect to their names, to our names, right? And they must go straight, they must save themselves from haram. That became the secondary thing. It's just part of the nikah. So now, if you're going to have a marriage on the rocks, then you don't blame those children only, you blame yourself as well. Because how you started this new journey, you started off wrong. It's an edifice that you started incorrectly. So it's going to go off. The child is watching also. My father is more concerned about the show, deco, whatever dress. And you go to Dubai to go and get the wedding shopping right. And then everybody is complimenting me. Hey, mashallah, very good wedding. I really enjoyed the Gajar Alba. Hey, make dua for those spouses that they go right. They go right. Rabba keeps them steady. I don't have any comebacks. They're happy, they're prosperous. They're giving the right type of guidance to the children. Moving. Now that's what the whole nikah is about. That they live part lives, and like your parents have given you the right guidance, you pass the right guidance to your children. Now that is out of them. So, sometimes that is a problem. And sometimes the parents also don't realize how should we behave with our children after marriage. They need to realize that now, before marriage, this was ours, right? Now, it's a husband, it's a wife, right? Maybe it's our son, maybe it's our daughter. But now they need to run their lives. So in the running of their lives, many times, parents act very, very stupidly. One is trying to draw the whole couple to his place. One parent is doing this, and the other one is learning to his side. Learning this side, one is learning that way. Now those newlyweds, they get into a confused now. What was it now? अगर इसकी आ जाता है तो ये नाराज होता है, इसकी आ जाते हैं तो ये नाराज होते हैं, अब क्या करें? Going this side, he's getting upset. Going that side, he's getting upset. Right? So they have to think positively, correctly. Don't live in a dream. See the responsibility. Kullukum mas'oolun. How beautiful is it? Nabi Sallam is saying that. And with what fear, what feeling Nabi Sallam is saying. All of you are responsible. You don't think at any time that you're free of the responsibility. So you're playing a game, you're trying to learn this side, learn this one, that side, right? And Allah Pak is seeing what's going on. Ati kulladhi haqqin haqqahu. What is his haqq now? As they stand, they're married. Now what is the haqq? What is the right thing? What is the sensible thing to do now? So, these type of things are not taught at all. You don't think about it. You say, oh, they must come to my place. And we will take care of it. Leave your dreams and fantasies. Think about these children here. They're growing. They must have a direction in their lives. If you're not around, they can continue with their lives. Think positively, correctly. That's how you're supposed to be thinking. So, the complication that you got, sometimes the run-up to the marriage, and sometimes the aftermath of the marriage. Sometimes the run-up to the marriage, and sometimes the aftermath of the marriage. The parents have to think about this thing. Now, if you don't think about these things, just do it for the short term. I must do it. I must be the winner, right? What happens at the end? And you cry after that. A few years down the line, and then you are in tears. But this is because bima qaddamat aydikum, what you sent forth. That's what you're enjoying now. What you send forth. So you do it rightly, mashwara, thinking, put deen in front of you. You don't have problems afterwards. But now, my son, my daughter must come to my place. This, now you're making an emotional issue. You forget now what they're supposed to be doing. Then you have problems and you don't know what to do with it afterwards. See? So that deen must be the primary thing. First, for bidhati deen. Responsibility, thinking, mashwara, understanding. And I repeatedly say, see the distractions, the fitnas. In the face of all these fitnas, you can't be sleeping. You can't say, no, I didn't know about it. Can't say that. You saw your script once. You can't allow the script to take place for the second time. Once, first and last. Especially if it's a deen slip, then the first slip is the last slip. You don't slip again. I slipped once, I can't slip again. Now I need to make up my mind what I must do. Shouldn't come here, and they do the heaves, you see. And when they're about 17 or so, so I tell them, see, until you were 12, 13, 14, then the ustads and your seniors could push you. Hey, you're going to read so much door, morning, evening, and you're going to look after your Quran Sharif, right? But once you're 17, 18, nobody can take a stick and be behind you all the time. Now you need to be responsible enough. This Quran Sharif, my parents did their duty. Ustad did his duty. Now it is for me to see that this Quran Sharif is preserved in my heart. You say, no, until someone pushes me, I'll read. Hey, in a few years, you'll forget about it. Just come Ramadan time, you'll just learn that 4 rakats, that's your Quran Sharif. But if you assume responsibility, I did this thing here, I need to assume responsibility, I need to see that this continues, then you'll be a different person altogether. See, like that Hafiz Rashid Umar, right? And how fluently he reads. You just ask him, impromptu, 3, 10, 12, 3, 4, I'll just read like that. So that means he's been reading so much. When he's reading so much, I just ask him, call him up to recite, and he's reading. So that sense of responsibility, a person learning kitab, sense of responsibility. Going jamaat, sense of responsibility, right? Khanqa, the responsibility. And that is fulfilled when you keep in touch. If you don't keep in touch, then you're gone. So we're talking about this urus and how this urus started, right? So now, then when I branched off to this marriage, right, that the show becomes the bigger thing, and the actual thing in the marriage, that becomes the secondary thing. And these children that are in the marriage, getting into the marriage, they're watching what you're doing. Now you think, oh, they dressed it up and they brought disrepute to me. But did you think also that you also caused it? Did you think? You could see now they were interested in each other, but you delayed the marriage. You delayed the marriage just for convenience, 1 month, 2 months. And these young children were seeing each other. They were doing the haram. That was acceptable to you, this haram. Mufti Sahib Rahmatullah Ali received a complaint, you know, from a young married person that I was studying in university and I met up with my wife, a girl, fell in love, and then I spoke to my people, and then they were happy, the marriage consummated the marriage. Now, 1 year running into the marriage, one day I opened up her attache, her handbag. When I opened up her handbag, I saw a love letter from some past ex-boyfriend. Now, what must I do? Must I divorce this wife of mine or not? See the question that came in. We went to university together, we fell in love. Then I thought to myself, you can't carry on like this. Then I spoke to my parents, and she must have spoken to hers. And then we came together. Now, 1 year into the marriage, then I open a handbag and I see this love letter from a past ex-husband, ex-boyfriend. Now, must I divorce or not? That's the question. Right. So, Musa replied to him that, see, your letter, your answer is contained within your question. Your answer is contained within your question. Right. So, now how it's contained within your question, it's contained like this. You know you were in a pre-marital relationship. You know you were in haram. Yes. At that time the haram wasn't haram, isn't it? You were in a pre-marital relationship. But whatever the nature, maybe you didn't become too intimate, right? Some level of intimacy, but not too intimate. But you were in haram. Any pre-marital relationship is haram. So you were involved like that, right? So you were breaching the trust with Allah Ta'ala. Right. Now, after you have got into the marriage, right, she felt it was alright to breach trust. See, premarital and you, both of you, were breaching trust, right? So you entered into the marriage in this state that you are breaching trust. Now, postmarital, you are still breaching the trust. So now, why do you complain? When pre-marital and you were breaching trust, so there wasn't, you didn't raise an eyebrow. Now, post-marital, why are you complaining now? And then the last sentence he made, the last statement he made, that was really frightening. He says, the fear is that if you divorce this wife, you will get a woman, you will get a wife that is even more immodest. So you rather just keep this thing here. And then he quoted the ayat, Al-Khabithatu lil-Khabithin wal-Khabithuna lil-Khabithat. You were immodest, so you got a woman that was immodest. Right? Immodest men for immodest women. Immoral women for immoral men. So this is how it works. You were immoral, so you get someone like that. Now you got this, but this is how you behaved, and this is the end. Right? So obviously now, both of you all have to make an effort to come right. That is why This woman's jamaat, I don't discourage. Someone saying, I'm discouraging all that. My simple question is this, that ask any alim, right? If it is a small problem, medical problem, small problem, you'll try and sort it out at home, right? Some fever, flu, so you'll take some panados or hot lemon or something and you'll sort it out, right? But it comes a little bit more than that woman is prepared to go and see a male doctor. Is it right or not right? Isn't she prepared to go see a male doctor? So she removed her parda because of medical reasons. Just to go see, to go sort herself out, right? But if the problem has gone even further, more further, then she'll be hospitalized. Then even her body parts will be exposed. Seriously will be exposed. And no alim will say anything against that. Why? For medical reasons, she needs to go do this thing, right? Now, look for spiritual reasons, right? Spiritual, that girl is going completely down. You can see now, she's clubbing, she's working in a factory, she's a secretary somewhere, or she's a professional woman, she's driving around, she's moving around, right? Right. So spiritually she's totally broken down, devastated. Now, if for physical, medical reasons, it was permissible for her to go and sort herself out in the presence of a male, then isn't it compulsory also to go and sort herself out now when she is broken down? And it's going to take a process. You go to a woman's jamaat or a little bit of a madrasa or something, right, and go and sort out. You will not say that the structure will be absolutely 100%. Like, you cannot say that the hospital and the doctor's clinic is 100%. You'll have some problems there also. One man comes here, he says, you know, my daughter, she's of age now, so she's about 14, 15, we're living very elite and all that. So someone from the neighborhood, he interfered with my daughter. So I took her to a doctor, you know, sort of a specialist doctor. I went just so that the doctor may be able to give her some counseling, you know. But he did even something even worse to my daughter. He did something worse. So in the process you have problems. But you see, because of this one isolated problem, don't you ever send your daughters to a doctor, to a hospital. Do you say that? And the worst thing is, where the ummah has to look into it very seriously, right? That many an individual, when it is maternity, then they got a male gynae to do the whole delivery. Now imagine when he's doing the delivery, the whole body, from the checkup till the delivery, right? How many times this person is going to give an internal examination? And can the doctor say that I don't have any feelings? If he says that he's got no feelings, he's speaking a lie. Because he had no feelings, how you got married then? He got married, that means he's got feelings. Obviously he's got feelings. So this male delivery and male gynae thing, they must substitute it. Whichever way they can do it, they must do it. Because, up to the 1960, I can remember, 63, all the deliveries were done at home. And you can say easily 90% were done properly, correctly, no complications. Now after 1960, they say, no, they must take to the specialist here, this one here, and that one. And then those gynaecs got a whole cutter going on, and they got a problem, they got a whole business carrying on. Say, no, if this woman may be coming out on the weekend, you know, and it'll spoil the whole weekend. So just induce labor. And if it doesn't work out, then just do a Caesar, close the chapter. But we need to give a covering story. Covering story is the cord is around the neck. It's left to you now. Oh, the whole Shifa hospital is working that. Cord is around the neck. Go for it. It's a sellout, absolutely sellout. It's a disservice to this whole thing. So this male gynae thing is out. They have to look for some replacement. What I'm showing you that for this you can go to this extent and no morale can ever say, nobody speaks out against it. And that woman is off now you need to bring her on the track. So obviously it's going to take some time. Send her for 3 days jamaat, send her for some madrasa or something, get her back onto track. Now you say, no, either she stays at home or she must be a loose woman after that. No way for her to come in. I ask you, is the reasoning right? In qiyas, you got a thing like badarja awla. There's a law in fiqh, So Quran Sharif says, فَلَا تَقُلْ لَهُمَا أُفْ. Your parents, right, sometimes they're getting a little bit aged, so they may get upset for small things, right? Small things, maybe they shout or something. But what the Quran Sharif says, you don't say anything against them. Don't even say oof. Right? Don't even say oof. So now someone gives an explanation to this. Yes, the Quran Sharif only said, don't say them oof. But the Quran Sharif didn't say, take out your shoe and smash them on the head. So that means to smash them on the head is permissible. Now is this reasoning right? You say, but they're older, all the more. If you can't tell them, oof, then all the more you can't be so rude towards them. So similarly, when for dunya reasons, right, if the person died in the process, he won't get guna. But in deen and he didn't try to come right, then won't he be gunagar? Badarja ula. You know, say badarja, all the more. So this principle is used. Anyway, this urus is becoming too long. Shall we? We'll continue it tomorrow afterwards.